96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the position of the management and staff of Guardian Network. Welcome to Guardian Radio AM. My name is Kekintu Parker. I'm your host. And thank you very much for joining us for a brief discussion today of what is going on in Davos, Switzerland. The World Economic Forum is happening in Davos at present. And the world's leaders and their representatives are discussing I suppose one would call them the headline stories of the world economy. And some of those stories have a very definite impact on the Bahamian economy and the Bahamian way of life. And I just wanted to pass a note to you about what we're doing here on Guardian Radio AM. You know, Our goal here is to examine a big international story of the day and to determine what, if any, connections that story may have to the Bahamas and to discuss those connections with you, our beloved listeners. So, of course, you're welcome to call at 323-6232. 325-4316 or 325-4259. And we welcome your text messages at 422-4796. And I don't think there is any bigger story today than the World Economic Forum, if only for the fact that so much of the world's news-making power is concentrated in Davos at present. Again, if only because the outcomes of these conversations are likely to have knock-on effects that we in the Bahamas will have to deal with, particularly our first sort of mini story. And that is the, well, before I say it, I just want to define a term. The term is stagflation. And in economics, stagflation is also known as recession inflation. And it's a situation where the inflation rate is high, the economic growth rate slows, and unemployment remains steadily high. And of course, it presents a dilemma for economic policy, since actions intended to lower inflation may exacerbate unemployment. And from the headlines at Davos, one of the economic consultants, a gentleman by the name of Bob Price from Bridgewater Associates, has made sort of a grim warning that the United States is on the verge of stagflation and that markets are under-discounting gains in consumer prices. That's kind of a big deal. Another of the big headlines, and this one will kind of run throughout the commentary from Davos today. European Commission President Ursula von der Leyen has made an urgent appeal for international action to prevent a global food crisis that she said is being maliciously stoked by Russian President Vladimir Putin. The impact of Russia's invasion of the Ukraine is dominating the gathering at Davos, which is in the Swiss Alps. And that's going to be obviously something that we, who are an 80%+ import country, will have to be taking special note of. When I first talked about the impending food crisis and the rise in prices, I mentioned the obvious corollary, which in a country like the Bahamas is, how are we braced to withstand a global food crisis where prices for imports shoot up to costs that we simply can't afford? This is the scenario, the nightmare scenario that statesmen and policymakers for decades have been warning about and talking about the need for food security and self-sufficiency in the Bahamas. And the truth is, we've not taken it seriously, because after the restructuring of our economy in the 40s and 50s, we moved away from being sort of an agro-industrial country with a history of export and the ability, arguably, to feed ourselves a little better than we can now, for certain. We've become overly reliant as an economy on tourism and financial services, neither of which are necessarily tuned to promote food security. The dollars from tourism flow so easily that it doesn't seem to matter to us as a community that 85 cents of every dollar that we take in from tourism turns around and goes right back out of the country, either in terms of profit or in terms of exports that we need for survival, more or less. You juxtapose this against the fact that in the Bahamas, we have, and I was talking with Romy Ferreira on my show on Sunday, and Romy makes the point that the Bahamas' exclusive natural marine resources are among the most productive and the most complete and useful and sustainable, certainly in the hemisphere and likely in the world. So there is an industry that surrounds us, 100,000 square miles of the country, most of it is water. Most of it is full of the kind of marine resources that we could use to boost our self-sufficiency and our ability to feed ourselves. And yet, that industry continues to subsist as, or to exist as, almost subsistence farming. The people who fish for a living, in my view, should be the industrialists of the country. But instead, they're not. They occupy a level of existence in the economy that's not, I mean, it's practically negligible, which is insane when you consider the fact that our natural marine resources could feed us, and that's probably why God put us here. We've heard from politician after politician, policymaker after policymaker. Even now, Clay Sweeting, the Honorable Minister for Agriculture and Marine Resources, is once again touting the age-old, let's get the chickens and eggs and let's do the dairy. Well, that, I mean, Shivago Line talked about that. Pierre Dupuch talked about that. This is not, that's not new, right? V. Alfred Gray talked about it. It's not new by any stretch of the imagination. And despite the fact that it's been something on every government's policy agenda since I've certainly become aware of policy agendas in politics in this country, that's the early 80s. Here we are in 2022 without a significant dairy industry, despite the fact that you have a number of people who are active in the sector. So this idea of a global food crisis that is looming and that has all of these industrialized countries terrified must present for us in the Bahamas, it must present a significant catalyst for us to actually get off our backsides and do what is necessary to protect and feed this nation. Before we get into what's going on from Davos, apparently we already have a phone call. So caller, I thank you. You are live on Guardian Radio AM. What say you?
The gate is stuck in a way so long with you, Quincy.
Brother Brandon, what's up?
Well, we need justice, law, and order in this country. But before I put my, before I pose my question to you, the gentleman that's responsible for the law association, is that your brother?
Yes, it is.
Okay, thank you. Now, let me ask you something. Why is it that you think all of those political parties who suppose call themselves progressive?
Progressive, yes. That's what they say.
Say it again?
Yes, they do call themselves progressive. That's what they say.
But the thing is, they still use the 1940s model. And they take it at light in using it. So why are you saying
I have no idea why.
Say it again?
I have no idea why.
Well, you know, they need to be dealt with because they are not looking out for the Bahamian people by using that same old model.
Okay? I agree with you, sir.
Mm-hmm. Say it again?
I agree with you, sir.
Thank you.
Thank you for your call. In fact, I remember during my time as a reporter for the business editor, I think I was at the Journal at that time, the Bahama Journal, Love 97 News. I interviewed, I asked a question of a sitting prime minister at the time about diversifying away from tourism. And what I was told was that the Bahamas could not afford to diversify away from tourism because the money required for diversification was money that came from tourism to begin with, and that Bahamians were not necessarily prepared to go through the tough times that successfully diversifying the economy would entail. And I think that over the years, I have come to accept that while on a personal level, I might disagree with that, that I could understand how someone who spent their life in politics where where Bahamians seem to believe the politicians can create money and create resources just by the snap of a finger or the stroke of a pen, I could see why you would come to think that. But and I would like to believe that in hindsight, that that prime minister, that former prime minister, would agree that diversification is a necessary evil, right? It is going to take time. It will mean that some people will make less while the diversification is happening. But in the end, we will get to a stronger, more sustainable, more equitable economy. And I think that is incredibly important. Let's go back to the phone lines. Thank you very much for calling. You are live on Guardian Talk Radio.
Yes, sir. Good evening. Good morning, sir.
Good morning. Hello? Yes, hello.
Yes, Papa hit the nail right on the head. I thought only I recognized that the progressive party in this country is not progressive. You know, they're conservative, you know. And you see, what I noticed is you're talking about this farming thing and being self-sufficient. You know, you remember what happened to Jamaica, you know, in the Lomé Convention, you know. The British, you know, they gave us that caveat, but our politicians threw it away, you know. And what the U.S. did was they destroyed the dairy industry in Jamaica, and even the banana, you know. And then you see what I'm saying, and that's, they did it by subsidizing their farmers. You understand me? They subsidized export goods. Especially export goods, just to crush the Jamaican dairy industry. It was thriving, you see. So what we have to do is we have to subsidize our food sufficiency. We have to the same how we subsidize other things. We even subsidize the foreign investors.
We need to
subsidize ourselves. You see, our politicians need to be progressive. And not be aggressive, and, you know. Thank you much.
Yes. Thank you for your call, sir. Appreciate it. We actually pay money to subsidize the advertising of multi-billion-dollar corporations who are making money here in the Bahamas. I hope you hear me. We pay advertising. We pay flight costs. We pay a tax on the people who come here by cruise. These people are making money, bringing people here, and we still are paying to help them make money. Because we are thinking and arguing and moving as though we do not have a seat at the table, in my personal view. Caller, thank you very much for your patience. You're live on Guardian Radio AM.
Quincy, I call back to let the brother know my name is Braymond Darling Ferguson and not Papa.
Yes, I was going to correct him in just a few seconds. Yes, sir. I appreciate that, Brother Darling. All right. Thank you. Let's go to the next caller. You're live on Guardian Radio AM.
Hello.
Hello.
Hello. How are you doing today?
Yes. Thank you very much for your patience.
Well,
you're live
on
Guardian Radio AM.
You know the thing about it is, right? For the last 35-40 years, consecutive governments was using the sexy topic, we have to feed ourselves, we have to sustain ourselves and all of that, and wouldn't give us the ground line and wouldn't give us the facilities to do it. I hear some people talking about these 500 acres that was cleared down inside the Carmichael Road area. You know what my thing about it is? The humans ain't going forward because we hate ourselves. There are foreigners who are being possessed in these lands, burning coal and all of that, talking about forestry for the last 40 years. And I didn't hear the outcry of that, but they hear the outcry of behemoths. We hate ourselves, and because we ain't the one who getting the land, then you making all kind of noise on it. Now, the thing about it is, you think 500 acres would have been cleared down if the government didn't know anything about that is? They had some kind of permission or some kind of thing. I mean, you know, it's so crazy in the Bahamas, and that is why we will never move forward.
We as the people
want better, but we don't want better for if we ain't had that opportunity to get this thing and get this land. because you get it, and because you, the political party, get it, another political party going to stop council and review. These people want the possessions of the land, and they want people to farm, but they do not want to give beams the opportunity. And it's crazy.
So do they really want people to farm if they're not willing to give people opportunity?
It is crazy, sir. And this foolishness has to stop if we want to be owners and possessors of this land. We are second and third class citizens already. And we get drunk for it and for it down if the political electorate don't stop playing with us. The former prime minister, we're going to deal with the inner city. We're gonna lower taxes in the inner city so they can develop and all that. He been in there 4.5 years and he ain't do nothing. Then all of a sudden now, you got to tax the rich. Stop playing with us. You had an opportunity to do it and you didn't do it. Stop playing with the behemoth people's minds and insulting our intelligence.
Paula, I appreciate you. I want to be very, very careful that we are fair to the record. The former administration did pass legislation to enable inner city developers to access concessions and those sorts of things in ways that had not been done before. So even if they did not do everything that they suggest, they promised to do, they did do some. Maybe it wasn't enough, but it was something. Callers. Oh, okay, good. So, should I say this? I'm going to say it. I was riding around with a friend of mine the other day, and we did a little, you know, when you're taking your little joke corners, so you can shave off a couple of minutes off your journey, right? We did a little joke through Bain and Grantstown, and on so many of the streets, we saw these pop-up shops where people pull up a cart, they hang the clothes on the thing, and all of a sudden they have a shop on the side of the street where you could go buy clothes. No permits, and no kind of remuneration to the government, no taxes, just whatever they sell, pure profit. Now, the argument that I heard and continue to hear is that the majority of these people who are doing this are illegal immigrants or are doing so without, as I say, any recourse to the government for permitting and tax purposes. However, if a Bahamian tried to do it, they would probably be arrested. I have another conversation ongoing with a friend of mine trying to get a mortgage, and the hoops that she is having to run through just to get a mortgage, to live, to buy a piece of property and build a home is absolute insanity. By the same token, I have a friend who lives in one of my neighbors who is a foreigner who was able to walk into one of the banks, get a loan, buy a piece of property, and start building a triplex. I hope you hear what I say. So this idea of self-sufficiency and feeding ourselves is bigger than just food. What it gets to is at the heart of the matter. We have to see ourselves as the owners and inheritors of this land. And at present, I defy any Bahamian to tell me that they or the political party they represent sees Bahamians as the owners and inheritors of this land. Because I could give you 45 years, 46 years, 47 years of independent history to prove otherwise. So back to what's going on in Switzerland at the World Economic Forum. Kermit, do you have that first clip, the one from Bob Prince? Bob Prince is the co-chief investment officer at Bridgewater Associates. That's one of the big consulting firms in the U.S. And he talked about the fact that the U.S. is on the cusp of stagflation. And I want us to listen to this conversation that he's had with a reporter in Switzerland. So Kermit, if you could play that, if you could, please.
How do you respond to market pundits who maybe once read an NBER paper and say, a recession's coming? How do you respond to that?
I say, hi, Tom and Lisa. On global recession, yes, I mean, we're getting that question a lot. Our April numbers for global growth was 3.6%.
I want to play that. Can you go back to the beginning of that? That's not the one that I was asking for. But that's fine. I want to play it. So let me introduce this properly. This is the first deputy managing director of the International Monetary Fund, Geeta Gopinath, who is talking about the restrictions on food exports and a shortage of fertilizer, which means that food prices around the world are likely to continue to increase. This is somebody from the IMF talking about what's likely to happen. All right, so let's start again with that same clip, Kermit.
How do you respond to market pundits who maybe once read an NBER paper and say, a recession's coming? How do you respond to that?
I say, hi, Tom and Lisa. On global recession, yes, I mean, we're getting that question a lot. Our April numbers for global growth was 3.6%. Now, at that level, that is a healthy number for the global economy. There are headwinds, absolutely. There are many downside risks. But I think to say that at this point, the global economy, that there is a recession, I think that's a bit premature. But I think there are regions of the world that are getting hit quite hard, especially with the war more recently. And Europe is such a region where you could see countries that go into some technical recessions.
So here's the problem for a lot of people who are seeing a gloomier side of things. Snap came out this morning, the CEO last night actually, and said that the macroeconomic backdrop is deteriorating much faster than they had previously expected. This is similar to other things that we have seen out there, basically a surprise in the negativity. Does that draw your concern, particularly with the slowdown in China and how much that's bleeding over?
We certainly are getting news that, you know, shows more weakening in the global economy. I think one big data point is what came out of China in April, that for the April numbers in terms of retail sales, that was significantly worse than we were expecting it to be. We're seeing interest rates going up in all the major economies, and it's changing quite rapidly about how much of an interest rate hike will happen and how quickly. So there are significant downside risks over here, and we have, by the way, always been flagging the fact that there would likely be stock market corrections, volatility in markets, and we're seeing that.
Are you counting on the Fed to pause in September with their rate hikes in order to achieve a more optimistic scenario?
Inflation in the U.S. is broad-based, so this is not all a supply story. There's an important demand component to it. I think it's very important for the Fed to rein in inflation as soon as possible. And even at the rates at which it's targeting right now, for some time, we're going to be in low real interest rate territory, so negative real interest rates in many cases. So that's still, you know, accommodative for the economy. So I do think they should not take the eye off the ball in terms of bringing in down inflation.
I need to link in the IMF's work, and I think people are surprised as they associate a food crisis with the World Bank or with the United Nations, and yet the IMF does prodigious work on this as well. Our Eric Martin makes clear he is studying Egypt, is, if you will, one of the test tubes of this horrific price change we're in terms of rice, in terms of wheat and such. India's led the way with the first fears of blockage of exports. What is the IMF doing to give confidence to nations that are struggling with wheat and, heaven forbid, I would say, rice?
Tom, this is a major concern for us. I mean, it's not just India, but if you look at food exports since the start of the war. Around 20 countries have put restrictions on food exports, be it wheat or be it palm oil and many other such products. And fertilizers also are in serious shortage. So we worry a lot about what's going to happen with food prices. I think it's one of those prices where there's probably more that's going to go up in the future than what we've already seen. And it is a major concern.
The history here is a domestic government will come to the rescue, flatten prices like the cost of bread in Egypt has been flat for decades, and subsidize whatever the commodity is until it breaks. How close in your study, country to country, are we to a breaking point of that domestic subsidy to feed people?
Now, after 2 years of the pandemic, governments around the world, especially in countries like Egypt, do not have the fiscal space to provide widespread support. And this is something that we are tracking very closely, exactly this question of how many countries are now facing these rapid increase in import prices and therefore are likely to have balance of payments problems. This is one of the trackers that we have. And this is a major concern.
How much is this a failing, frankly, of the developed world from supporting Ukraine more? In other words, from actually providing more financial aid in order to get some of those supplies to the rest of the world?
You know, this is a very challenging issue about how to get Ukraine's supply out of Ukraine. The problem is the embargo on the Black Sea. I mean, you just cannot get the ships to take the wheat out. Thinking of creative solutions in terms of putting them on trains and sending them out through that way, but that's going to take a lot more time. In addition to the war, we're also seeing the effects of climate change around the world, and one of the reasons why India has put its export restrictions on wheat is because of poor yields and bad weather. So that's another big negative. But we really do need to try very hard at this point to try and get supply up as much as possible around the world.
Given all of these pressures, how long will it be until we get inflation back to a level that is familiar pre-pandemic?
It varies depending upon the part of the world you're speaking about. But for instance, if you talk about the US, our projections in April had inflation staying above 2% well into 2024. This is core PCE inflation. So it is coming down. With all the interest rate increases that are projected, inflation is expected to decline. But I think the bigger headline is the fact that it remains well above the target for quite a while.
I want to get out front of this wonderful panel I'm doing tomorrow with you. Mariana Mazzucato will join us as well, among other worthies. Growth economics is taken for granted until you take a course in growth economics and you realize what Robert Sola did in 1957, Borders on Religion. We take for granted growth. My experience is the IMF does not. What do we need to do to sustain growth given three once-in-a-lifetime events, global financial crisis, medical pandemic, and now a war in Ukraine? You don't take it for granted. How do we sustain growth?
I think a fact that not many people are aware of is that post the pandemic, while we have advanced economies pretty much returning to pre-pandemic trend, which is where they would have been in the absence of the pandemic, that was a projection which is likely to happen in 2023, 24, we have many emerging and developing economies that have large amounts of scarring. So for that income group, they have GDP, which is about 5% below what they would have had in the absence of the pandemic. And this divergence is something that we pay very close attention to. Of course, they had much less fiscal wherewithal to provide the kind of support that was provided in the advanced world. Vaccinations came very late to them, and they still are not vaccinated. Mm-hmm. There's now also a major demand problem over there. So all of these areas need to be fixed.
So what does a 3% GDP growth in China mean?
All right, Sermon, thanks. Cut it there.
You know, that would be...
So that's one of the head economists at the IMF basically sounding alarms about a number of different things in the global economy. Growth is going to take longer than expected. There's a shortage looming on meat and possibly rice, which means that the prices for those things are likely to go up in the short term. How long those prices will be elevated is not certain. And so, again, we need to be prepared as a country to deal with these things. I want to go back and play a bit of the conversation with Bob Prince from Bridgewater Associates on the U.S. and stagflation, because I think it has obvious implications for our tourism and foreign direct investment sector. So, Kermit, let's play the first part of that conversation.
What are the ramifications if this bond bear market continues?
Well, I think the way you have to look at the bond market is that there are really two bond markets, according to what's priced in. There's the front end of the bond market, which is priced in a tightening. And then there's the back end of the bond market that's priced in that everything's going to be fine after that little tightening, and that the inflation rate's going to go back to 2.7. So the near term has been priced in along the lines of what you're saying, and that pricing has passed through to equities and other assets. But the second round of tightening hasn't been priced in. It hasn't been priced into the bond market, hasn't been priced into the stock market, hasn't been priced into break-even inflation. And so whether that's actually going to happen really depends on the underlying drivers of the inflation, which I think would be good to go into. But there's more to go. I think maybe in the near term we get a little pause because the Fed will probably follow the forward curve up. But even if they follow the forward curve up, you're looking at a bond market that has not discounted anything higher than 2.7.
How do we recover from this? You and I have never, 78, pre-Volcker, 77, 78. How do we recover from bond losses like that?
You got to hold something besides bonds.
Goats.
We'll get into commodities.
Or stocks, for that matter. Right. You got to go to inflation assets. You got to go inflation index bonds would be better than nominal bonds.
Before we get
go
into
ahead.
A number of the issues that you talked about, including the sources of inflation, which are key, I want to pick up on something that you were pointing out, the second round of tightening, because you can figure out what's going to happen with the Fed, but perhaps people are not getting the response in markets correctly. If the bull case, as people are laying it out, is that the Fed pulls back, is that actually a bullish indicator for equities, or will that actually be negative because it will only send long-end treasury yields that much higher priced down?
All right. Let's pull it there, Kermit. Yeah, they're getting into the weeds of a conversation about the U.S. in particular, but sorry, I just wanted to make it clear that things for the U.S. at present are not looking sexy. And what that means is that we have to prepare ourselves as a dependent economy to tighten our belts. Right. On my Sunday show, I talked to Fred Mitchell about a month ago now. And one of the things he talked about was the fact that during the pandemic, Bahamians kind of had to come to terms with what it looked like with no tourist dollars in the economy and no tourists on the ground. I think that we are perhaps prematurely believing that is behind us. And I wonder what we are doing from a policy perspective at the government level and also at the private sector level to prepare for those tough times. It's not enough to be able to weather the tough times. I think that we as a country have a tendency to knuckle down and bear it without necessarily at the end of it learning the lesson and moving ahead to prepare so that we are more prepared for the next time that same difficulty knocks on our door. And that's a problem that I think we need to consider. This first text says, oh, well, thank you. It says, great show as usual. You need to think about 20 years from now, there will be no land in Nassau. People will have to have property by 35 and by 50, or and it'll be selling for 100,000. Okay, and this one says, what that person can't understand about that area where they want to install 2 million cesspit, what? I'm sorry, I wish I, text you, may have to try again. I don't understand what you're saying. This one says, morning, good show, full of knowledge. If we as Black people do not unify ourselves and support one another, we and our children will forever be slaves to others. Well, that is true. And our, the thing is, our history as a country is a history of community. It is only in the last 100 years or so, I think, that we have become so atomized and have turned away from the concept of the village. And I think that's to our detriment. I mean, our parents talk about, you know, I'm gonna be 50 this year. And my parents talk about when the people in the neighborhood felt free to discipline them if they saw them acting a certain way. And the point was not that your neighbor could cut your backside just to cut your backside, but that your neighbor was looking out for your well-being and wanted to help your parents keep you safe and raise you as the community determined was the right way. We have lost that communal sense where what I have is not just for me, but it's for those who I care for. And those who I care for extend beyond my immediate family. I don't think that, honestly speaking, I don't think that that exists anymore. As a statement of identity for the modern Bahamian. And as I say, I think that is a tremendous loss. And I honestly hope that somehow we can manage to recover that aspect of our country. So when we come back, we'll wrap up our look at what's going on in Davos today. And we'll be right back on Guardian Radio AM.
A local paper in Grand Bahama is back every Tuesday as a section of the Nassau Guardian. Available at local stores, gas stations, pharmacies, Western Bakery, and Bellevue Gifts. Daily and, of course, on Tuesdays, too. Want to reach your Grand Bahama audience? Then call Barefoot Marketing at 827-4578 or message them for ad rates via their Facebook page. Advertising opportunities now include classified ads, too. Keep up with all the latest Grand Bahama news in the Guardian newspaper every Tuesday.
Girl, you see how Cora eye look funny all black up yesterday?
But she say she bump into a wall when she's running after the churn them.
Yeah, but last Saturday you see her arm was all black and blue, right?
What you saying? You think something wrong between her and Jack?
I ain't sure, but you know Jack is a jealous man. I hear him and Cora last Friday. I hear him say he hear Cora have eyes for Junior.
Now you know that ain't true. Cora is a good woman, does mind her business, take care of them churn and go to church every Sunday. So what you think we should do?
I think we should report Jack, you know. Cora don't say nothing, but silence hides violence, and we don't want to line up in the cemetery.
Not me. I ain't getting in nobody business. Then Jack come after me and I line up next to Cora.
No, man, we could call or text Crime Stopper. And remember, we can even get some grocery money for our tip.
Remind me again how this work.
We can call them in Miami at 328-TIPS or 328-8477. Or when we in the island, call toll free at 300-TIPS or 300-8477. And if you don't have no minutes, use the Crack Crime Bahamas app and we could text them. And the messages get all mixed up before it leave your phone, so nobody somebody can know what you're saying.
So what are we waiting on then? Let's go earn some grocery money.
The most important thing in life is family. And whenever you need reliable advice, you look to the people you know you can trust. At J.S. Johnson Insurance Agents and Brokers, we earn our clients' trust every day. Whether it's home, motor, travel, or commercial insurance, we've got you covered. Call 397-2100 or visit jsjohnson.com.
J.S.C., 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 J.S. Johnson Insurance.
Welcome back to Guardian Radio AM. This is Kay Quincy Parker. It is my pleasure to be with you on this wonderful Tuesday morning. It is the 24th of May, 2022. Let that sink in. Where is this year going? It's already the fifth month of the year. Just out of curiosity, the Progressive Liberal Party, the Davis administration, has been in power since September 21st. So that's October, November, December, January, February, March, April, May. That's 8 months of governance. We didn't really do a six-month review. And I wonder whether or not we should maybe correct that on this show, maybe next week. I don't know. Something to think about. All right. So another set of sort of headlines from the from Davos, the World Economic Forum. Citigroup, the head of their business in Europe, Middle East, and Africa, his name is David Livingston, of all things, said in an interview that in the U.S., inflation hasn't been present like it is now for four decades. And the situation is similar in Western Europe. He says the distinction of Europe, of course, is energy input volatility. That is to say, gas prices are much higher there. And if there is further interruption, Mr. Livingston thinks that it's going to have very significant inflationary effects, which will pass on to the consumer very quickly. That means that Citibank's, European clients have become more cautious, and they are conserving because, of course, of the results of the war in Ukraine on energy and inflation. This next story supports what the IMF firstly director said earlier. So the chief executive officer of Majid Al Futtaim Holding LLC, which is a Dubai-based retail and property conglomerate that owns the Carrefour hypermarket franchise in the Middle East, said that it would no longer be able to stop passing on rising prices to consumers. That CEO's name is Alain Bejani, and he said it's not possible anymore. He said the impact of the Ukrainian conflict on global supply chains is huge, and that Saudi Arabia and Dubai are bright spots for the company, but even with those, they still cannot stop passing on price rises to consumers. Also coming out of the Ukraine is concern about something called monkeypox, which is an African virus. To be clear, it is not considered to be the next COVID-19. And the world already has the tools it needs to contain the outbreak, but there is an outbreak of monkeypox in Africa. Just something to watch. This is a hopeful note. Or should I end with the hopeful note? I'll end with the hopeful note. Back to Ursula von der Leyen. What she said was, quote, "Russian artillery is bombarding grain warehouses across the Ukraine deliberately, and Russian warships in the Black Sea are blockading Ukraine ships full of wheat and sunflower seeds. Europe is working hard to get grain to the global markets, including 20 million tons of wheat currently stuck in the Ukraine. And the bloc is also boosting its own production and working with the World Food Program to make sure that vulnerable countries can buy food at affordable prices." That's across the pond. What happens when those supply chain concerns finally reach this side of the Atlantic? Are we prepared? Are we getting prepared? As a note of interest, IBM CEO Arvind Krishna said a major cyber attack on critical infrastructure is going to happen. Speaking on a panel that he was on, he said it was inevitable that a bad actor, probably a nation state, will hack essential public services somewhere in the world. He revealed that digital coverage of the Augusta Masters golf tournament last week was hit with 40 million cyber attacks. I hope we're paying attention. CATL, which is the world's biggest maker of electric vehicle batteries, said it expects sales of combustion vehicles to end in major markets by 2035. At the latest. It's another 12 years where we're going to be able to buy these gas guzzlers and gas hogs, if CATL is correct. Next to last, the world's seven biggest polluters will have to spend $67 trillion by the end of the decade to stay on the path of achieving climate neutrality by 2050. The economies, that is China, the United States, the European Union, Brazil, India, Russia, and Japan, are responsible for 70% between those six countries.
Local paper in Grand Bahama is back.
Of greenhouse gas emissions. And they got to spend all of that money. All right, so yes, I hear you, Kermit, and I will submit. I just want to say that John Kerry says we can win the climate change war. So, folks, that's gonna do it. We're out of time. We'll see you next week at the time or sometime later. You're listening to Guardian Radio AM. Have a wonderful day. God bless.